This is Everything We Found, conversations from Search and Replace. I'm Joe Taylor Jr. This companion podcast includes all the interviews and ideas we couldn't fit into our regular show. And while Search and Replace is designed for radio, we don't have the same time constraints here. Every once in a while, I get to talk with someone who's got way more ideas than we could ever fit into 7 minutes. And that's the case with this episode's guest. Tracy Wilson Rossman runs marketing for Philadelphia-based technology company Chariot Solutions. Many other folks know her as the founder behind Tech Girls, that's with a Z, a nonprofit that develops free technology workshops that help inspire middle school-aged girls all over the world to explore careers in technology. She was also a founding member of Philly Startup Leaders, Philadelphia's largest and most active community of startup entrepreneurs. Tracy's been exploring the idea of what she calls an itchy brain, and I'll let her explain in this special presentation of our full interview with just a few edits for clarity. I know Nicole in the pre-interview, she came back to me and said the first question I need to ask you is, tell me about the sensation of your brain getting itchy.
I know. I guess the older I get, the weirder I get. That's all I can say. I think the best way I can describe my brain being itchy is I have this idea or thought that it's just, it keeps knocking in my head. And I really need to figure out what to do with it. So it does, it relates to ideas more than anything when I refer to that, so that your audience does not think that I'm totally like losing it. But I really have thought about this over the last, or captured the idea over the last, I would say, year and a half. As I have been writing more, as I've been gathering different areas and bringing them together, my LinkedIn bios, I've put on their dot connector. And I think that bringing these different pieces together, sometimes just it's a lot and you need to get that information out. And for me, until I've scratched that itch, I just need to just get it out, whether it's on paper, whether it's talking to somebody. And it may not be a business idea. It could just be a group of pieces that I've seen come together, that I think come together into a cohesive sort of narrative. I hope that makes sense.
I think it does. Tell me, I want to go a little bit deeper. Tell me more from your perspective, the sensation of that idea starting to itch at you and trying to get out. Does it pop into your head at unexpected times? What's it feel like for you when you're gestating one of these ideas?
Yeah, it's really more of, it's over a period of time. And I'll give you an example of something that I've been trying to get out there, but it hasn't found a place yet. It may not find a home. So bringing together the idea of women in music and women in tech, and how there's similarities between, and music and technology are two areas that are near and dear to me. How do those two relate? How can I bring those two audiences together? And that started probably about 2 years ago, as I was seeing some people who were doing smaller festivals, and then also just seeing how some of the musicians, whether they're men or women, are very entrepreneurial in their own way, because they are building, they're building their brand, they're building a business around themselves. There's just that similarity between those two groups. And then how do you allow each of those groups to commingle? So I have this idea called the Women in Tech and Music Tour or Festival, which we were going to bring to light during the Women in Tech Summit. And then, of course, this year that went down the tubes because there's no live events. So that may just be thing that winds up being like The sensation of something that's itching on my brain, it's almost like until I can bring it to some sort of end, and it could be failure, but I just want to see it happen in some form or fashion. So this one hasn't been able to be resolved yet.
And knowing that all of this is in flux, and as a sidebar, I think this touches on a lot of my own interests and experiences as well. One of my running projects has been, I came up through the music industry in the early 90s, and then I pivoted, like many people, in the 2000s to tech. And I cannot help but observe all of the mirror similarities between the A&R people that I interacted with in the 90s and all of the VCs that I know now. They're the same people. Some of them literally are the same people. And so it does strike me that I feel, when I hear you say that, a lot of the musicians that I've interviewed over the years, there are so many similarities between women I know who were trying to make space for themselves in this industry in the 90s and the women I know now who are trying to make space for themselves in technology today. So you see, that idea, the idea absolutely like resonates with me. So when you bump into the external blockers, right? So what I'm hearing is under normal, quote unquote, what passed for normal in January, I think you've got a path to what this idea would have manifested as.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So when you run into that kind of blocker, how can you shepherd the idea around that to something that your brain will feel like, even if it's not a win, even if it doesn't register as exactly what the idea was, how does it get to resolution as opposed to failure?
Yeah. I don't know what this, because I am not an audio person, I am going to need to find somebody who can help me if we're going to live stream. And that's one of the things that is a blocker right now. If I had done this early on in the pandemic, I think we could have been able to execute. I could have found somebody. It wouldn't have had to be perfect. All of these different things. Now I feel like there's some other forces that are out there that maybe conspiring against me to execute on this idea right now. And to some extent, I may have to give myself a little bit of grace to say, all right, you need to shelve this away and bring it back when circumstances are better for you to be able to, I can run a live event. That's not an issue. A live in-person event. There's other things that are behind the scenes that are out of my wheelhouse. So I either have to find somebody who can help me execute, or I just have to shelve it for the moment and just know that it's just going to bother me. So that's part of the sensation, is that it's bothering me. And I'll bring another musical reference here. I remember, I don't know if you're familiar with Tori Amos.
Oh yeah.
She's, if you've ever heard her interview, she's very cosmic. Let's put it that way. I think that's a nice way of putting it. She would say that her songs would be talking to her, and she named them and they had references. It was like they were embodied. And I always think about that too, with these ideas, with these connections, that they're almost living, breathing pieces of me. And they're inside of me, and okay, they're talking to me. I get it. It sounds out there, but I think that's just part of the creativity that I bring to my job and outside interests. And I've never talked to anyone about this, so you're the first one to hear this one.
Nicole and I, when we started this project, we said we wanted to open up space for folks to talk about the kinds of things that they normally don't talk about in their day jobs. And I think the neat thing here, again, this resonates with all the musicians I've ever worked with and interviewed will say something that, again, resonates here. There's often this bell curve between the hit song that just drops out of the sky and into your lap in 20 minutes, and then the piece that takes so much more effort to materialize. And most of the musicians I know will tell you there's hardly ever any middle ground. It either just appears fully formed and pop within a half hour. If you can think, the example I always love is the idea that Dolly Parton wrote, if I have the story, she wrote, "I Will Always Love You" and "Jolene" in the same day. Wow. And then so many other songwriters will tell you that they might have spent a year on something that in their mind won't even touch either of those things. Even folks who have had number one hits would say something like that. So I think the crux of what I've been talking about with folks lately has been anything can be a creative piece. I think business itself can be creative. Technology can certainly be creative. Some of the best developers I know remind me of the best songwriters that I know because they approach code in that same way. And so,
well, I think that's, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
That I think that is something that we lose when we talk about business, that business can be creative. It's not just about being in marketing or the creative visual piece. If you're a web designer or graphics or things like that, there's a creative piece to what I do and what others do when you are developing a business, when you are developing new ideas. And it may not be seen as something that is giving back to humanity, but I think that by allowing those in the business community to understand, and then the tech community to understand that there is a creative piece to what we do, and to name it as such, that's why I'm very interested in hearing about other people's creative process. I'm fascinated by that, whether they're musicians or filmmakers or somebody who's creating a deal. That process, I think there's so much to learn from that we can apply to each other's lives.
Absolutely. The thing that always strikes a chord for me is the idea of the role that your creative output plays in the lives of audiences or customers or fans that you never get to meet or might not ever interact with. And some of the best creative business people that I've ever met are those folks that have the bandwidth or the capacity to understand that you need bandwidth for that transcendent experience to happen, whether that's in a shop or store that you've put together or in the interpersonal interaction between a customer and an employee, or it's about thinking of it in the same way of what happens when a performer is on stage. And sometimes this can get boiled down into cliche by folks that are trying to use it to beat something over the head. But the idea of thinking about the business or the event or the thing in that same reverence as a performer playing a song or a troupe putting on a show leads you to thinking about your audience in a much more empathetic way, I found. And with the expectation that we will come around to a new version of normal that probably won't look like what normal looked like a year ago, when you are back to interacting with folks in person at events and producing events, what to you is the hallmark of an event or an experience that draws that creative spark out of the people that are attending your event or a part of the organizations that you've put together?
I never imagined that I would, that part of what I do is event driven. It just developed over a period of time, and that's how I think about things. And to me, it's about bringing together. It is about creating community. It is about providing, in what I do, it's providing information. I think it's really any event that I do, if you can't leave the event with something that you can use in your life, business life, maybe creative life, depending on what I'm doing, then I haven't done my job. I see a lot of events that wind up, especially on the business side, they're very surface. And for me, that's not what I want to give back. I want to really drive down as much as I can. And if I am doing something that is, I always say, are we looking at this from the 50,000 foot view, or are we looking at it from the 5,000 or 1,000 foot view? Like, how detailed does it need to be? And that's also understanding your audience and what you're delivering. So even if I get to do this music mashup with music and entrepreneur mashup, I'm hoping that what's going to come out of that is going to be how we can help each other, how women can help each other, no matter where their business or creativity lies. So that would be an example. That's just important to me. And that's how I try and think about the content that I'm putting together.
Tell me a little bit more about your journey from being someone who was executing ideas on behalf of someone else to executing your own ideas and being that vision, you know, being the visionary and not just the integrator, to use the business terms.
Yeah. And I think it's part of a journey that I never thought that I would be on. And I guess at some point in the first quarter of my career is when my husband and I purchased a business and we became entrepreneurs running a small business where it wasn't my idea, but I was still running it. Technically, I was executing on somebody else's idea, but it was for me to make the money off of that. So maybe that was the first step. But I think where that jump came was when I could feel that I could try and start something and not be afraid. But a lot of times we talk about, what would we tell our younger selves with the wisdom that we've gained right now? And so many times I hear other people, and I say this a lot, don't be so afraid. And I think that when I let go of fear of failure, that I could become that person who could have that idea and run with it and lead. Now, when I talk about fear of failure, I also sort of juxtapose that with the idea of you also have to understand the risk that you're taking so that you're not like losing your entire livelihood or well-being with not jumping out of a plane without a parachute. But again, when I start thinking about what do I have to lose if I try this, that to me has been really the catalyst for changing who I am.
So as you continue on this journey, what do you think you want to project forward when you, let's say, and I'm sure we'll talk again sooner than this, but we're having this conversation again in 10 years and you're looking back, what would you want the future you to be telling the you right now?
Wow, this is deep. I feel like I should get tissues out too. Let me think about that. I would say that I continue to allow people to gain information so that they were able to build off of what I had done. And it doesn't have to be Tech Girls was definitely for me this weekend. One of our early moms of one of the, she and I had, for some reason we weren't connected on LinkedIn. So I connect with her on LinkedIn, and then she writes this like 3-paragraph piece of what I had given to her and her daughter and other people who were impacted by the work. You don't think about that when you're starting something, but when you get to look back and somebody is able to give you that perspective of what you have done, that's what I want to do.
Fantastic. I want to loop back because we talked about it on the last series we did, but I want to grab just a little bite for context. Tell us a little bit about Tech Girls and how that came to be.
Tech Girls came to be because of the work that I do. And this is the dot connecting, right? The work that I do at Chariot. So started at Chariot Solutions, one of the early founders. The origin story of Tech Girls always goes back to I'm the only woman sitting on the management team. We have very few women that have cycled through Chariot. And I didn't really understand the why of why was I not seeing more women come into this field? I really didn't understand it. I was working with really smart people. There was variety in what we were doing, the impact, the change that was happening, the flexibility, all these things just seemed to me a place where women would thrive. I sat with the idea for a little bit, and it wasn't the idea of Tech Girls. It was the idea of I see this problem and I don't know how I can make a change, how I can change this. So in between being part of Chariot Solutions and starting Tech Girls, I was part of the founding of Philly Startup Leaders. So it was it was not my idea, but I was part of the founding board. And I think that it was really interesting. That piece allowed me to jump to feel that I could take my chance on starting Tech Girls, because we started an organization from scratch. So it wasn't like, oh, I just went from Chariot to Tech Girls. There was this group in between, which was an ability for me to learn along with other people. During that time period, I was also understanding what the ecosystem was for women in tech, doing research. One thing that I find important for myself is that if I have something that is bothering me, if I start talking to people about it and laying down the gauntlet for myself that I'm going to try and do something, I wind up finding other people who are interested in the idea and want to be part of this, want to be part of the journey. And it also keeps me accountable so that I'm not just spewing ideas. So I got to a point where I understood that I had an idea. I had people that I could work with who could help me formulate a plan. And then we could say, hey, we tried this. It worked or it didn't work. And we would have a point. And that's really, to me, it took a while. And I would say that it was probably 5 years in my head. And I didn't have the term then, but yeah, it was itching my brain. And the way that it came out was Tech Girls.
Great. I think we've got plenty here for an amazing episode. And I know I took you a little bit over time, but is there anything else that you want to add or anything else I should be asking you right now?
I don't know. I think your audience, this part you may need to cut, but your audience is probably going to think that I am really strange. No, I don't think so. Certainly it was an interesting prep, the questions that Nicole sent. And I had to really think about what bothers you. And I didn't want to be negative about it. It's just, what was the exact question? I have it right here, if you don't mind me going over. What is the thing that you have? I have lots of stuff that I have trouble tolerating.
Yeah, it's right. It is the year 2020, so.
Right. There's lots of stuff. So I had to really think about it. And I think that if you could put this in, I think it's important, the fear. So many of us, there's so many people I know who have ideas. I hear them all the time. And they don't go past talking about an idea. Like whether they're afraid of failure. And I've heard this also in various parts of my life. Oh, if we do this, it's going to make us look bad. And I go back and I say, who's going to think we're going to look bad? So it's, again, letting go of how people are going to see you and understanding, if you really take it down to what is the worst that would happen. And for the most part, people are holding themselves back because of fear of what other people are going to say or think about, you know, them not working.
I think what you're saying aligns with what so many of the guests for this series are telling us. It's exactly the case of whatever hangups we have over the people that are in our lives or how we might perceive the market or an audience. And I think, again, it comes right back to songwriters. I can think of songwriters who decide mid-career that I would like to write some Americana now. Can't wait to see what the label's going to think of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they get put in this box,
yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah, and...
Because, yeah.
And...
No, I totally...
Yeah, so I think there's so much that kind of comes together with the notion of what it is to build not just a career, but that portfolio of not work, but impact over time. And it is, yeah. It is such a thing to look back at times and say, boy, what were we afraid of? And the inverse of that is if I had less fear, I could have done that thing, or I could have been doing that thing that we look at from afar. But yeah, this is the downside of me going for a series that's 7 minutes in length, because I feel like we could go for about 2 hours on this.
I hope you enjoyed this special presentation of our full conversation with Tracy Welson Rossman. You can learn more about Tracy from the show notes and by visiting our website at searchandreplace.show. Search and Replace was produced by Nicole Hubbard, with support from Christine Benton, Connie Evans, Amelia Lohman, April Smith, and executive producer Lori Taylor. Our theme music was composed by Alex Refire. I'm Joe Taylor Jr.
This has been a Podcast Taxi Radio production.